Chapter 41. The coordinates Skippy provided did not make any sense. He directed us toward a spot of empty interstellar space roughly 64 light-years from the 47 Tucani star cluster. Skippy, I zoomed the star chart in and out on my laptop. Are you sure about this? There's nothing at that location.
It looks like there isn't anything.
Zooming in again, I confirmed the closest star system was a red dwarf 5.5 light-years from the coordinates where he expected to find Unit 333. Are you looking for a rogue planet? A wanderer? Or a brown dwarf?
No star and no planet. That's the point, Joe. It is empty space.
Trips is hanging out in the middle of nowhere?
Yes.
No one would ever think to look in that location because nothing is there.
Oh, I get it.
So Trips and its ship were all alone out here?
No, that is the puzzling part. That location used to be the site of an emergency space dock. There were about 30 of them scattered across the galaxy. A facility sort of like the Ragnar station we found, except this space dock can accommodate only a single ship. The puzzling part is that particular space dock was reported as destroyed during the AI war, so I don't know why Trips would have chosen to be there.
Maybe it thought something might be left of the station, some material it could use.
Eh? Maybe.
That unit's ship might have been damaged. If so, it certainly should have sought a better option for repairs. All the other space docks would have been under surveillance by the enemy, right?
Good point.
We should jump in at a distance. Check if it's safe.
There's no point to that. The space dock will be wrapped in a stealth field.
Valkyrie's sensors won't be able to detect anything, even if we are on top of the space dock. It will have to be within my presence, in this case about a distance of 80,000 kilometers, for me to even verify it is there.
That's not optimal.
It is what it is, Joe.
Part of me wondered why he didn't call me dum-dum or one of his other usual insults.
He must be feeling the strain, like he didn't have the mental energy to bother with insults.
This is your show, Skippy. Whatever you need.
I can't think of anything that would help me right now.
What about a special, unscheduled karaoke night?
Thanks, but I'll pass.
Whoa.
Are you okay, buddy?
Joe, I am not even close to okay. I not only can't see okay from here, the navigation app says directions not available.
That's not good.
Hey, I get the feeling you're not okay either.
Shit, you're right.
You wanna talk about it?
I can send for a beer if you like.
You know what? I don't wanna talk about it.
How about we go to my cabin and rot our brains with some mindless TV shows?
Can I remind you that you are now sharing your cabin with Margaret?
She'll be cool with it.
Are you sure?
I am.
She was cool with it. Not that sitting on a couch with Skippy's avatar between us, watching a Futurama marathon, was her idea of a fun evening. She could tell I needed to not think about the enormous problems that lay ahead of us, to not think about anything. When I woke up the next morning, I did feel better. Until Skippy ruined my day.
That's interesting, Skippy muttered as Valkyrie hovered near the coordinates he had supplied. By near, I mean within 2 light minutes. He couldn't be any more specific. The encryption feature that included details about the sender's location was not intended to be used as a sort of GPS. We had to jump into the area and send out active sensor pulses to find the stealth space dock, if there was one. How could we have any hope of penetrating an Elder stealth field? We couldn't, so we weren't doing that. Our sensor pulses were creating a very detailed map of the area, pinpointing the location, speed, and trajectories of even individual hydrogen atoms. More than 5 light-years from even a weak red dwarf star, there was not a lot of anything at all around us. Fortunately, we had the incomparable skills of Skippy the Magnificent. He knew where the particles streaming out from the nearest star met the loose dust and gas of the interstellar medium that saturated the galaxy, with the outward pressure from the star confronting the ISM pressing inward. The motion of every particle was mapped and could be predicted, but only by a supremely powerful AI. He created a model of the entire area, comparing the current motion of each bit of dust and individual atom to determine where those motions had been affected by an unseen object in the area. They were. When he showed the result, it was clear that an object about half the size of our battlecruiser was leaving a wake as it drifted through the area, causing particles to bounce off and move around it. The object was invisible even to Skippy. All he could guess at was a very rough outline of an object shaped sort of like a skinny egg. Quit your grinning and drop your linen, I found it, he crowed. An outline appeared on the display. There it is. You sure about this? I asked, seeing only a vague blob on the display. That could be anything. The object has the correct size and shape of the space dock we're looking for. It also has the shape of a Taco Bell building wrapped in a sheet. Ugh. It is concealed by a very sophisticated stealth field, dum-dum. Okay, but if it turns out the thing inside that stealth field is a giant death ray cannon pointed at us, I will be very disappointed. It's too close for a jump. I noted the distance on the display. Fireball, take us to within 60,000 clicks. Well, shit, Skippy groaned as we maneuvered close to the still unseen object. This is a problem. Is it dangerous? I asked as Reed had a finger poised over the button to initiate a jump. Not to us. Dangerous to our plan to take that ship, dammit. Explain, I ordered as I waved for Reed to stand down. The ship is busted? No, it's not in perfect condition. 333's ship was badly damaged, and the space dock was also damaged, though obviously it did survive the war. Huh. That was clever. What was? Trips knew its ship needed major repairs, more than the onboard self-repair systems could handle. The space dock also needed major work. So it brought its ship here and used the resources of the ship to fix the dock first. The work isn't complete. Trips only performed the basic repairs to get the space dock's fabricators back online. Since then, the dock has done what it could to make the ship flight-worthy. Can the ship fly? Yes. I wouldn't want to take it into a major combat action, but we can deal with that later. The ship is not a problem. The dock itself is. But it's not a danger to us? Not to Valkyrie, but it will prevent us from taking the ship. What is the problem? The dock has constructed its own separate security system, robotic guards that I can't control. Shit! I should have considered this might happen. But how was I supposed to know Trips had taken shelter in a derelict space dock? When Trips went offline after the reset, the dock's separate control system automatically went into secure mode. The Elders must have some way to deactivate the thing, but I have no clue how to do that. Robotic guards? Smythe asked from his seat behind me. Like comm bots? Sort of, except these bots don't have an operator. They are autonomous. Skippy, this doesn't make any sense, I complained. You Master AIs were the security system for the Elders. They didn't expect anyone else to be here, so why did they waste resources on killer robots to protect a space dock when there shouldn't be anyone to kill? Listen, dum-dum. First, the bots I'm talking about are not single-purpose, dedicated fighting machines. The good news is the original security bots were taken apart long ago for materials to repair the space dock and the ship. Those units, he shuddered, were absolutely deadly. Densely packed nanomachines that formed what is essentially a thick liquid, almost impossible to stop. Bullets would pass right through without significant harm to the material. The only threat to those machines is broad-beam directed energy weapons that the Star Team doesn't have. The bots protecting the dock now are repurposed maintenance units that have a limited capability of reconfiguring their structures into a variety of shapes and uses. Like Transformers? Ugh. I suppose you could say that. Although these units can't turn into cars or motorcycles. Got it. Can you hack into them? Unfortunately, no. If I could do that, I would not have described this as a problem, numbskull. My ability to reach inside the hull of the space dock is extremely limited. I looked back at Smythe. He shrugged and asked, "What information can you provide about the bots? Their capabilities?" Whoa! Skippy held up his hands. Remember the bot you encountered in the tunnels under the surface of Gingerbread? The one that you had to run away from? That bot was old and creaky and in terrible condition, and it still would have crushed you and your entire team. Let me be the judge of that, please, Smythe insisted. Is it possible to upgrade our suits and weapons? To make an Elder Buster model? Skippy's eyes bulged. OMG, have you lost your mind? The answer is no. The basic limitation of your suits is the squishy meat sacks inside them, and there's nothing I can do to upgrade those components. Waving a hand to cut off an argument, I asked, "What can Skippy the Magnificent do?" I told you nothing! Come on. Your extreme awesomeness is legendary. That is true. In this case, however, my awesomeness ends at the outer hull of that space dock. I can't hack into the systems over there.
They were specifically hardened against an AI like me, and I can barely even see inside there. My presence only allows me intermittent access to the internal sensor network. All I would be able to do is get a good view of the Star Team being slaughtered in there. Smythe asked the question before I could. The security bots rely on this sensor network? Of course. That's how they coordinate their actions, which makes them even more effective and deadly. Could you spoof those sensors?
No,
Skippy snorted. Not even close. It's not... Well, Shmaybe. To a limited, very limited extent, he warned. Do not get your hopes up. First, I would need to extend my presence inside the hull. That's impossible unless... I suppose if your team is going in, you will need to create a breach first. That could be my way in. You would need to bring signal repeaters, which we don't have. We could make them. It's not that difficult to fabricate a simple piece of equipment. You know what I could do? No, that's crazy. Let me be the judge of that, please, Smythe said with more patience than he usually gave the beer can. Okay, but it is seriously crazy. I could partially jam the internal sensor system. That would prevent the bots from coordinating their actions and throw off their internal guidance systems. Why is that crazy? It would also prevent your team from effectively coordinating, and your targeting sensors would be unreliable. Smythe looked at me, then back to Skippy. His face took on a wolfish grin. What about, he pointed to his right eye, this targeting system?
You gotta be joking, Skippy snorted.
OMG, you are not joking. Colonel, you intend to go up against Elder technology with nothing but a bang stick on your Mark I eyeball?
Bang sticks, our eyeballs, and our trust in the awesomeness, he said. He wasn't even being sarcastic.
Whoa. It was my turn to object. Skippy, how many killer bots can we expect?
7. Space docks normally have 42 multi-purpose defense units, but all of those were destroyed in battle or were taken apart so their material could be used to repair the space dock and the ship.
7? Okay. I turned to Smythe. That doesn't sound too tough.
Maybe it... 7 fast, strong, very hard to kill hostile bots, Skippy insisted. Constructed of Elder technology. I cannot stress enough how difficult this fight will be. Please, reconsider.
We absolutely need this ship, Smythe asked.
We do. There must be other Elder ships. This is the only one I could locate. Also, damn it, he sighed. We are running out of time. Shit!
To prepare for boarding the space dock, Skippy set up simulations for the stars to run. The results were not encouraging. Even with the heaviest weapon available to their mech suits, the stars could not inflict disabling damage to the space dock's defense bots before Smythe's team was entirely wiped out. The team learned from each simulated failure, adjusted tactics, and tried again. And failed again.
Bloody hell, Smythe grunted as he lifted off his helmet, disgusted by his team's latest simulated loss.
Sweat matted his hair to the helmet liner. Even the high-tech wicking material had not kept him dry during the extreme exertion.
That is not optimal, I noted, which was a super helpful thing for the commander to say right then.
Before I could backtrack on my stupid comment, Smythe snapped at Skippy.
The dodgy beer can is stacking the deck against us.
Hey! Skippy's face got red, a new emulation of human behavior for him.
I am not the one stacking...
Okay! I shouted before Skippy could reveal information that Smythe and his team didn't need right then. Information that might negatively affect their morale and performance.
Skippy, are these sims the worst case or the most likely?
I'm guessing, Joe, he huffed.
The worst case is the most likely scenario.
All right, how about this? Can you dial back the response of the defense bots to a level where the stars can achieve the objective?
You want me to dumb down the game?
He stared at me.
Oh, sure. No problem. How about I add some NPCs and let them win the fight? Is that what you want?
It's not a game, I shot back before Smythe could speak. What I want is to see if the stars have any chance at all to win this fight. Find a level where they can win, then level up to a stalemate. Can we do that?
I don't see the bloody point, sir. Smythe shook his head. If a scenario is not realistic, we are just wasting time.
Find a way to win and learn from that, I suggested. Your team getting beat up every time isn't useful to anyone.
They tried my suggestion. It actually did help, just maybe not enough to make a difference. The stars could overwhelm the defenses in detail only if the Elder Bots acted in a confused, totally uncoordinated fashion that just was not realistic. Skippy warned he couldn't actually screw with the space dock's internal sensors enough to degrade the defensive response to the level required. Unless, he reluctantly admitted to me, after Bilby prodded him to reveal something the two AIs had discussed, Skippy could get direct access to the space dock's central processor. If he had control of that processor, he could seriously screw with the information feed to the ship's defenders without degrading the sensors of the Star Team. It was like our very first operation with the beer can to take a Krestang frigate near Paradise. Back then, he had to be physically jacked into the data system aboard that ship, not because Krestang information technology is so well hardened against hacking, but because their tech is so crude. Later, as he became more familiar with the IT architecture of Lizard warships, he was able to remotely access their computer substrate. With the space dock, we could not risk the Star Team carrying his beer can into the fight in case the battle went against us and Skippy was trapped in there. Fortunately, he didn't need his canister to be jacked into the central processor. He fabricated a sort of USB stick that contained a submine to do the job. Let me see this thing. I held out a hand as the casing popped out of the fabricator and a robotic tentacle thing reached for it. You can't see anything, dum-dum, Skippy scoffed. I haven't even loaded the submine into it yet. There isn't enough storage capacity to keep the submine stable, so I can't activate it until shortly before the stars are ready to launch. I know that, you ass. I want to see the interface. I slapped the tentacle away and snatched the stick off the tray. It was slightly warm. Hey, if you want a souvenir to remember this occasion, I can make one for... What is this? I pointed to a notch on the end of the stick. The end that was an oval, with one end flattened, and the other end had a notch cut into it. That is where the operator plugs it into the port, he said slowly, like he was talking to a particularly dim-witted five-year-old. Show me this port. We don't have one aboard Valkyrie. Why do I have to explain this to... Fabricate a mock-up of the port, then. Ugh. Why do... The stars will need one for training. Okay, well, I guess that is a very good point. There was a humming sound, and the fabricator popped out a box the size of a home electric outlet with a port in the center. The box was also slightly warm, and my fingers tingled when I touched it. I have to line up the notch with this tab in the outlet? Yes, and make sure you tilt it away from the flat end as you insert it. It is a very tight fit. You might have to wiggle it a bit. No, I yanked the stick out. We are not doing any of that shit. Which part of the stick needs to make contact? Peering into the end, I saw a shiny gold needle in the center. Is it this thing? Yes. That goes into the cylinder in the port, but if you don't get the whole sleeve lined up properly, it won't be secure, and how long does the submine need for a complete transfer? 2.3 milliseconds. Joe, that port was never intended to be used after the space dock was operational. Skippy, think, please. You expect an operator in a mech suit, possibly injured, under fire, and certainly under extreme stress, to line up this stick with a port and wiggle it just right so it lines up? Okay, maybe that is a good point. Sorry, he sighed. I'm under a lot of stress, you know. When I try to plug in a simple freaking USB connector, I get it wrong the first time. Then I flip it over, it still doesn't work, and it only works when I try it the first way again. That happens in my office when the only stress I'm experiencing is thinking about what to have for lunch. You need this thing, I tossed the stick back on the tray, to plug itself in if an operator gets close to the port. Got it? He redesigned the stick so it was much larger, easier to grip in powered gloves, with an armored casing to protect it against shrapnel and overflash from directed energy weapons. The important end was twice the size of the port and contained a thick, flexible tentacle that would automatically extend out and into the port, seeking its own connection. Testing with the Star Team showed all an operator had to do was get within a couple centimeters of the port, and the stick would do the rest of the work. That was good, and the stars thankfully never saw Skippy's idiotic original idea. They needed to have confidence that our elder AI knew what he was doing, even though from experience they knew that was not always true. The shift in tactics provided more encouraging results, at least in simulation. Rather than the Star Team having to destroy all seven defense bots one by one, they could concentrate their force on a single objective. get the Submind jacked into the Space Dock's central processor. Even with a less complex objective, even the best run through simulations resulted in half the stars disabled or dead by the time the Submind infected the Space Dock. Once the Submind could interfere with the defense system's communications and coordination, the remaining stars still needed to hunt and kill every single one of the killer bots. Smythe and his team were exhausted, physically, and more importantly, mentally. They were making slow and steady progress toward developing tactics to defeat the Space Dock defenses, though Skippy privately warned me that he was still dumbing down the simulated defense response. After another run-through exercise that was slightly better than the previous efforts, Smythe pulled me aside.
"Sir, you know I hate to say it, but this nut might be too tough for my team to crack. We are going to take casualties, and I simply don't have enough people to push through to the objective. I suggest that Valkyrie or the Dutchman goes to either Earth or Jaguar to bring additional star teams here." I bit my lip. What he meant was he expected that in an operation to take the Space Dock, most of his people would become casualties. "I need to think about it," I told him, and he just nodded, too tired to argue. I called a halt for the stars to rest. They were to rest, hopefully to sleep, but no more training or even thinking about the upcoming operation. My order included Margaret, who was as unhappy about my instructions as the other members of the stars. "We can do this," she assured me when she came out of the shower in our cabin. The fact that she yawned while talking and her eyelids were drooping made her statement less convincing than she intended. "I know," I lied to her. "You'll be better able to do it if your mind is sharp." "That," I grabbed her phone. "No phone, no tablet. Honey, you need to sleep."
"Is that,"
she yawned again,
"an order?"
"You're damned right it is, Marine. Get some shut-eye." She just nodded and flopped on the bed. By the time I walked out the door, she was already asleep. My plan was to sleep in a spare cabin that night after I rewatched some of the simulations. Maybe there was something Smythe and his team had missed.
"No."
Sims held out an arm to bar the door to the conference room, foiling my plans.
"You need sleep too, sir."
"I will."
"Now, sir."
She pointed at me.
"You can barely keep your eyes open."
"I just need to—"
"If you seriously think you will see some tactical error the stars missed, then Skippy needs to step down as the king of arrogance."
"Ah, okay, I hear you." Lowering her voice, she added,
"Joe, we don't need you for," she gun-pointed with both hands, "any of the bang-bang stuff. You need to be sharp," she tapped her head, "to keep the away team out of trouble."
"You're right." I fell asleep fully clothed on a single bunk in one of our spare cabins. It was really sort of a ready room for pilots, with four bunks and a bathroom down the passageway, but it was empty and dark and quiet. For about 5.5 hours when the lights snapped on and something woke me up.
"Huh?
Joe, we have a major problem." Skippy's avatar was standing on my chest.
"Can you get off me, please?"
"Ugh." He grunted as the hologram reappeared on another bunk. "Come on, get up. We have to move, General Bishop." He never called me General Bishop. Hearing that scared the shit out of me. "Skippy," I planted my feet on the floor. "What is going on?" "We are out of time. I just picked up a signal through the collective. The elders are instructing the two backup ascension units to begin preparations to reactivate. They wouldn't do that unless the primary site is already spinning up. We're out of time, Joe. We need to go. If we're going to do anything, we need to do it now. We need that damned ship. Before you ask, there is no time for us to find another Elder Starship."
"We're not ready.
The Star Team, they're not ready." "I do not know what to tell you other than the facts I know. Our only possibility for accessing an ascension site is aboard an Elder Starship. The only one we know of is here. We either go now with what we have, or we give up." Taking off his ginormous hat, he rubbed his dome. "Joe, I know this is a tough call for you, for anyone. You are correct that the Star Team is not prepared. We have to go right now? Can we run another Joe, in my opinion, no amount of preparation will be sufficient. The defenses are too strong."
"Shit.
I am sorry," he said without his typical snarkiness, holding his oversized admiral's hat in front of him. "I don't know what to tell you. We need to go now.
and from the moment the space dock is breached, it will be go, go, go until we attack the Ascension machinery. Again, I am sorry, but you need to make a decision. He didn't play the Jeopardy theme music or do any other of the annoying things he usually did when he waited for me to make a judgment call. I got the message loud and clear anyway. The Elders are coming back as we speak. I do not know that, but they basically sent the bat signal. That means they are in the process of activating the machinery at the primary site. Once the Elder Recon team is there in this layer of reality, it will become enormously more difficult for us to act against them in any way. Joe, if you tell me the Stars can't do it, that you won't send them into a hopeless fight, I am okay with that. This mission was a futile exercise from the start, I told you that. I had seen the Star operators die in simulations again and again while accomplishing nothing. If I sent them now, they had no chance. They would be going up against Elder Tech. Even Skippy wasn't sure what capabilities the defense bots had. Margaret would be with them. As a commander, how do you make a decision like that? By not thinking about it. Tapping my phone, I made a call, literally. Colonel Smythe, we have run out of time. Your team needs to go now. Katie Frey, who at the moment had to admit she thought of herself as Katie and not as a field-grade officer in Star Team Alpha, concentrated on stilling her shaking hands as she guided them into the powered gloves. The gloves were held on a frame that adjusted itself to her movements as she put on the mech suit. "Relax, Major," she told herself silently, looking straight ahead and not at the other members of the team. The compartment was crowded as the upcoming op included the ship's entire complement of 17 special warfare operators. All hands on deck, as the Marines in the unit would say. When the gloves sealed themselves to the wrists of the powered armor, she looked up at the helmet poised above her head. The textbook best practice was to let the bot automatically lower the helmet onto her head. That was also the safest way to handle the equipment. It also meant trusting her life to a machine. Not only her life. If the helmet wasn't fitted properly, she might be unable to perform her assigned task, and that could put the entire team at risk. Worse, it could endanger the mission that, according to Skippy, was essential to saving all life in the galaxy. "Jarvis," she whispered the bot that was responsible for fitting the mech suit to her. "I will handle the helmet, thank you."
"Yes, Major Frey," the bot replied in her earpiece, in a voice not at all like Iron Man's personal assistant, but with a distinctively weary sigh.
An unspoken protocol required her to avoid looking around the compartment as the team stood in thin, form-fitting suit liners before being fitted to their individual mech suits. She looked up, ready to grasp the helmet, when her attention was diverted by a sound to her left. Colonel Smythe was muttering something under his breath as his suit's gloves sealed up. Was he speaking to her? No, he was reciting a poem. Though generally she was no fan of poetry, she knew that one. It wasn't about flowers or love or beauty. It was a poem about death. Hopeless, futile death. "Half a league, half a league, half a league onward," the SAS soldier muttered. "Into the valley of death rode the 600. "Sir," she hissed in a harsh whisper, stopping him before anyone else heard. Startled, he must have realized what he'd done. "You heard that?"
"Barely."
"Enough," he frowned. She did not need to add that reciting the Charge of the Light Brigade, an epic poem about a British cavalry unit that was slaughtered by artillery during the Crimean War, did not set the proper tone for the upcoming action. The cavalry had been sent into a hopeless battle, a hopelessly stupid battle, supposedly by mistake, a miscommunication. The soldiers knew they were doomed not only to die, but to die uselessly. They rode into battle anyway, as the poem described. Theirs not to reason why, theirs just to do and die. Into the valley of death rode the 600. A minute later, when they both had their helmet sealed and could speak over a private channel, Smythe called her.
"Terribly sorry about that, Major."
"Not a problem, sir."
"I don't know why that bit of drivel popped into my head just then."
"It's not drivel, sir. And,"
she hesitated, then continued. Smythe had told her, urged her, ordered her to speak plainly.
"We both know why it was on your mind."
"It was inappropriate."
"No one else heard."
"I meant the Light Brigade's charge accomplished nothing. Courage in battle is admirable,
but the point is to win.
Who dares wins?
She recited the motto of the British Special Air Services, his home unit. We dare today, because we must win this fight. She nodded in an exaggerated motion so he could see the gesture even in her massive mechanical armored suit.
Will you address the team, sir?
He didn't answer immediately. Look at them, Major. She did, using the synthetic vision of her helmet visor. 10 people on pedestals being fitted into suits, another 7 waiting for a pedestal to be available. She knew what he meant. No one was talking, no one joking around.
They have their game faces on, sir.
Quite so. We all know what we have to do today. And why? We will win, because we must win. That is why ST Alpha exists.
It is, sir? Oh, I had been wondering about my generous paycheck.
He snorted, though neither of them found the joke funny. It was a way to burn off nervous energy. There was a soft chime in her ear, along with text in her visor. Her suit had passed inspection and was ready. It was time to step off the pedestal to make room for another operator. She stepped off the pedestal as Smythe also turned away. It was time to put her game face on. The stars marched from their section of the ship to their designated docking bay where 2 dropships were waiting. Frey led the column, with Smythe in the rear. With my back against the wall of the passageway that was suddenly too narrow and filled with special operators in their very special mech suits, I nodded to each person as they passed by. There wasn't any need for me to talk. I was silently showing my support and appreciation, looking at each soldier, sailor, airman, or marine, focusing on their faces, in case I didn't see them again. Smythe acknowledged me with a return nod, and to my surprise, he stopped. Sir, I didn't have any words prepared. Best of luck. We don't rely on luck, sir. Then, to my surprise again, he lowered his voice. This time, if you have any luck to spare, we could use it. Maybe he thought he had gone too far because he drew himself to attention looming over me in his hulking suit. I snapped a salute. It has been a privilege to serve with you, Colonel. He actually smiled and returned the salute carefully so his massively powered arm didn't hurt me. The privilege has been mine, sir. His team had marched out of earshot. I lowered my voice anyway. I have learned a lot from you. I know. There was that smile again. It has been rewarding to watch you grow as a leader. You are a fine commander, sir. If I had any part of that, you did, I said, aware that he was on a schedule. He nodded, pursed his lips like he had something else to say, then his faceplate swung down, and he continued on down the passageway.